Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today, I am joined by me. Yes, we are solo podcasting. I have a number of fun topics we will meander through today. Before we dive in, I am inviting you to, thanking you for clicking that subscribe button, for liking, sharing, commenting, helping me to tweak that algorithm in my favor. As you are listening on an established podcast platform like Spotify or Google and are inspired to leave me a positive 5-star review, that would also be super very wonderful. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com. It is not only the very best way to stay in touch and on top of my every next offering, it is going to give you a leg up as I long-term goal myself into a version of my brand wherein everything is hosted on dannykatz.com. So the long-term goal is no more Instagram, no more Odyssey, no more Patreon, no more locals, everything at dannykatz.com. So you could be one of those early adopters who gets in on that whole switcheroo in the making by signing up for said newsletter. I'm going to be talking about the newsletter today because there have been some changes. I am also super very pleased to announce that I am teaching a live webinar. This will be a 2-hour Language of Healing webinar, which is taking place on Thursday, January 26th at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And yes, it will be recorded. So if you are not able to make the call live, you will absolutely have access to the recording after the fact. The beauty of this Language of Healing webinar is that not only will you learn all of the precepts of the Language of Healing, which teaches us how to program our bodies for full, complete, and accelerated healing, for thriving and optimizing with our every word. You also get the opportunity to workshop any healing initiations you are currently navigating live with me and our High Vibe Superstar Tribe. So it's a phenomenal opportunity to bring to the call, to the webinar, any health healing initiations, opportunities that you are currently dancing with and workshop them with me live. So the link to register is in the comment section. Run, don't walk to nab your spot for this fantastic 2-hour webinar. All right, that does it for housekeeping. Let's dive in. Let's dive in with a sip because it's early here. Okay, in no particular order except whatever ended up in my notes section for today's show, we're gonna tackle some quantum languaging. We're gonna tackle some, even tackle. When I say tackle, that's a violent term, isn't it? I'm picturing football players like bouncing into one another. We're going to dive into a little bit of languaging that has been irritating me. It's been inviting me to talk about it with you guys. So when I hear podcasters repeatedly use disempowering languaging patterns, in the past, I would comment in their podcast or I would email them privately, and I've learned people don't really respond well to uninvited feedback on how they're choosing to podcast. And as that hasn't gone over very well in the past, I am now taking the opportunity to A, hold my tongue and allow people to use reckless language as they are inspired, and instead channel my constructive feedback to you, my superstar tribe who actually cares and is interested in receiving it. So I have been brushing up on the whole attachment conversation by way of the podcast Man Talks. I love that podcast. And even though it is specifically intended for men, I cannot recommend his attachment episodes strongly enough. He just speaks about them in this very accessible way that it just makes it very simple and clean to understand. He cuts through a lot of the like psycho babble, and it's been really fantastic for me in my own life, as well as in serving my clients who are also transmuting outdated attachment styles. And I was gonna do a super cut for you guys, and then this is something that we're gonna talk about, is in staving off overwhelm and burnout, I am resisting the urge to like overachieve and toss in a lot of extra work that like where there's not really a payoff. So instead of putting together a super cut of all the disempowering phrasing that I'm referencing today from the Man Talks podcast, we're simply going to talk about them. It's easier. I don't have to do fair use or switch off to screen sharing or anything. So when Connor, who is the podcast host, and I mean no disrespect to Connor, I think he's brilliant at what he does, and he just hasn't read my books or tapped into my paradigm. Like, we don't know what we don't know. No harm, no foul. When he's speaking to, let's say he's doing a video for those who are still transmuting avoidant tendencies, he will say, for my avoidance out there. So issue number one is stapling a trauma response or an attachment style to a personal identity by saying for my avoidance, or he'll do it for, you know, my anxious attachers out there. And like, I understand in terms of, I'm thinking of like Seth Godin and like languaging ourselves into a tribe, those kinds of pronouns will be helpful in terms of generating some sort of like tribal identity. However, he's doing his audience a disservice by conflating a style of attachment with a type of human being. This actually came up with me on a coaching call yesterday. My client is in the process of moving from an anxious attachment style into a secure attachment style. And when he was describing himself, he said, well, I'm the type of person who can't feel comfortable unless everyone else around me is feeling comfortable. And I said, hold up. Let's try that again. You are not the type of person who blank. You, by way of trauma, have adopted an attachment style that has in the past had you thinking you needed other people around you to feel safe and comfortable for you to feel comfortable. Do you feel the difference between creating an identity construct around, I'm an anxious attacher, I am anxious, I'm the type of person who needs other people to be okay for me to be okay, right? All of that is taking a temporary pattern born of trauma and merging it with our identity. I'm the type of person who, this is who I am. So from that perspective, from that framing, it's gonna be infinitely harder for anyone who is in the process of transmuting an anxious attachment style to transmute and to move into secure attachment when they've confused this behavior pattern with an identity. So like I said, we don't know what we don't know. So Connor, you know, has not yet read my work. I know he's not deliberately trying to sabotage his audience with this pattern. And when I listen to the podcast, I personally get super frustrated because I'm like, no one is an avoidant. And I just really look forward to the day where he clues into it and that can therefore be of that much more service to his clients by not programming them with any sort of identity attachment to the attachment styles that they are in the process of transmuting. So the other languaging pattern that I see around this is where he'll say, you know, again, if he's speaking to, if it's a video that he has created for people who are transmuting anxious attachment, he will very often say your anxiety. So what you wanna do with your anxiety, or when you notice your anxiety, or you feel your anxiety. So quantum languaging 101 is to eschew the urge to pair personal pronouns with anything that isn't serving us. Because when we do that, we create a quantum entanglement, right? When he says your anxiety, like let's say I'm in the process of transmuting an anxious attachment style. If I'm in that process, I'm already watching Connor's videos, right? I'm already in the conversation with myself. Anytime Connor says your anxiety, he's taking any distance that I've placed between myself and the outdated anxious attachment style, and he's closing the gap and he's clinging us together again. So it really creates this sabotaging cycle for those who are in the process of consciously transmuting their outdated attachment styles by way of stapling it to them with the personal pronoun your. So when I'm working, and again, I'm not saying that like, I'm better at this than Connor. That is not the point at all. I'm just, you know, I'm tackling this, again with the tackling. I am approaching this from the dimension and the perspective of the languaging, which is very different from how a lot of other coaches are working. No harm, no foul. I'm simply adding on to his great body of work in saying, it would be so much more helpful for his audience and his clientele were he to move away from the your anxiety to the anxiety, right? I've used this example several times. There's a difference between, oh, here's a pen, can I borrow that pen, or my pen. If it's my pen, I'm gonna hold on to it. I'm gonna make sure no one walks away from it. I'm gonna safeguard it, right? There's a different kind of attachment to my pen versus just a pen or the pen. So even for those of us who aren't in the attachment style conversation, it's something to keep in mind around any qualities in ourselves, behavior patterns that we're not digging to language them away from us with the impersonal the, instead of taking ownership of them with my anxiety or in speaking to, you know, a friend, a client, a lover, your anxiety. No, the anxiety that you are swiftly transmuting, right? Just encourage you, you know, for anyone who's inspired to play along, to feel into the difference between your anxiety and say this out loud, like say my anxiety, and just noticing any sensations, associations, emotions that come up around that, and then trying again with the anxiety that I am swiftly transmuting or letting go of, the anxiety that in the past I have dealt with, right? Any of these options create more space, and what they do is they keep the anxiety away from our present moment experience, and they keep the anxiety away from clinging. Like right now, I have these magnets. For anyone watching with their eyes, I'm swiftly upgrading and strengthening my wrist, and I'm at the stage of healing where I'm using magnets around it. These magnets, you know, like I was writing in my notebook today, this spiral notebook, and if I'm at the wrong angle, they'll catch, right? That just happened. So as I'm wearing these magnets, I'm being very mindful of what I'm around to prevent the catching and the sticking to certain surfaces. It's the same thing with languaging. When we're talking about anxiety or avoidance, or you know, addiction or frustration or rage or resentment or like whatever the qualities are, the personal pronouns my and yours act as magnets that create a sticking and a merging and an entangling with whatever it is they're modifying. When we move into the, there's no stickiness between the magnets and the surface. We've just transmuted that. So I wanted to bring that to our attention just off the bat. And then we're gonna get into the question of questions. So I think I've mentioned a few conversations that I've had in the past with Mo Fax of the wonderful Mo Fax, now defunct podcast with Adam Curry, wherein he was for 100 episodes deconstructing propaganda in different realms of culture than Emily and I do, than I do, than Adam and John do. I mean, I don't think there can be too many propaganda deconstructors in our current media climate. Anyway, Mo and I have been talking behind the scenes about putting together a course which has not happened yet, about how to ask better questions. And I know there's some famous author, thinker who says, and I'm not remembering who, so forgive me for the for the non-attribution and the possible misquoting, but the quality of life is comparable to the quality of questions that we ask. We can see this in terms of like the whole large languaging model ChatGPT situation, which I am going to get into in today's podcast, wherein the quality of information that we're going to get from these large languaging models is fully dependent upon the questions we're asking and how we're asking the questions. And this is something that I trained in journalism school. So we'll get into the basics in a moment. What brought this up is that last weekend I attended a conversation at the Lensic, which is like a, you know, kind of highbrow fancy theater here in Santa Fe, and they hosted Amy Sedaris. Now, I misunderstood the event. I actually thought it was going to be Amy Sedaris performing, when in fact it was Amy Sedaris being interviewed by a former New York Times contributor. And long story short, it was kind of a shit show. Amy was delightful. She's amazing. Like, she can roll with anything. And this interviewer was clearly untrained in how to ask questions or how to interview people. It was really startling that she was chosen for this event because, and I did look to see if there was any video online, and there wasn't any. So I'm just going to kind of give you guys some examples as to how not to ask questions, how not to interview people. So let me set the stage. It was Amy Sedaris and this other woman. They're both very fashionable. They both had these like brightly colored, you know, kind of full length maxi muumuus, and they looked adorable, but it was very much for this interview clearly like all about her and looking at her and like wanting to manipulate a certain perception from the audience of her as being like clever and quirky. And I'm not saying that this was conscious, right, that she went into this with this conscious intention. And this is what was communicated to me. This is what I picked up on from the questions she was asking. So rule of thumb, like this is what I learned in journalism school, and this is what I think makes me good at interviewing people, is open-ended questions, right? Not a choice A or B, not creating a story in my mind, presenting the story to the interviewer for them to say yes or no to. It's asking as broad and open a question as possible, me inserting as little like steerings or potential programming, just really open-ended so that the interviewee can come to the conversation fresh and fill in, like instead of filling in the blanks that I've may have created, like Mad Libs, like really take their response wherever they want to go. So this woman, the interviewer, I don't remember her name, and it's probably better because I don't want to embarrass her, although I certainly hope she's never given a job like this again because she was horrible. Her questions were all about trying to appear like cute and quirky. So she's like, okay, what's, you know, can you give us an example of something terrible that happened with a neighbor to you at some time? Like they were just completely random. Like, have you ever had a bad experience with a donut? Like they were so narrow and specific and really trying to be like cute and quirky, but not a lot of space for Amy to really go places because they were like so narrow and they had nothing to do with like an organic exploration or an organic unfolding in terms of what is the authentic Venn diagram between Amy and the interviewer. And where does our dynamic and our alchemy want to take us today, right? Like, this is what I think about when I'm interviewing anyone is I may or may not be familiar with their work. Like, I don't necessarily go the distance to like read a whole book before an author comes on the show because I'm not interested in those conversations. I think those conversations are valuable, and I have no problem with them. For me, I'm always more interested in who is this person in front of me? Like, what are they giving me in this conversation that I want to unpack? And this is really the key, and this is totally what didn't happen. So the other thing that really sullied this conversation, it totally wasn't a conversation. It was like, remember that guy from the actor's studio who would take the same list of questions that I think were at the end of Vanity Fair? And it was more like a poll. That's what this was. This wasn't a conversation with Amy Sedaris. It was a poll where someone just asks a list of questions. They're just checking them off, but they're not like present with the subject's responses, and they're not interested in taking them deeper or further. It's just like, here's my checklist of questions, age, date, weight. Like that's exactly what we were witnessing, except instead of age, date, and weight, it was, look how cute and quirky I am gonna be. Like, if you could choose between cake and pizza for the rest of your life, which would it be? She didn't ask that question, but that's kind of like the level of like shallow and silly and like childish that the questions were. And yeah, really wasn't interesting. So for me, what makes an interesting conversation is depth. And this is what I recommend, A, in terms of people interviewing other people, B, people wanting to get better at like socializing, people with social anxiety. Sometimes I'll coach people around this. Or even developing intimacy in a relationship is don't skitter along the surface. Do, 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 do. It's like skipping pebbles, right? That's exactly what this conversation was. It was like skipping pebbles, deep, 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 but nothing was tied together and no one ever went below the surface. And from my perspective, the key to asking good questions, the key to having a generative, interesting conversation is to go deeper, 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 deeper in, further in, take more steps towards the person. So what that looks like is, let's say there was like one of these silly questions, like if you could only have one thing forever, pizza or cake, which would it be? So let's say she said cake. Have you ever made a cake? What's your favorite kind of cake? What do you think the key is to a good cake? Did you grow up with your mom making homemade cakes for you? What was your best ever birthday cake? Like it's just going, here's the topic at hand. How much more can we unpack from this onion? Stay on this topic and let's go deeper and penetrate more. And what more can we glean from this? From my perspective, this is what makes an interesting conversation. And this is what makes for like a juicy interview wherein people are willing to reveal more. And I think that's the key to a good interview, is getting people to share things that they haven't shared before, getting people to see things, make connections they haven't made before. At least for me, like I love novelty in conversations. And I also want to get to know people in a real way so I could feel it. So if someone says like cake and I just move on to the next silly, shallow question, I'm not getting to know them more. But I want to know, why do you think that? Like, what are your experiences with cake? Like, how deeply can we penetrate the cake conversation? So when it comes to asking good questions, I think the key is stay on the topic at hand, and when the person like thinks they've answered, go deeper into the same topic. Staying with the topic, where can you take it, to another level? What's another piece that we can surmise from this? So I'll share another couple examples. I often talk about my friend Ross. My friend Ross, he and I have great conversations, and we like, I feel like we've for us and our Venn diagram of friendship for so many years, we've really figured out how to have a good time and how to cultivate a knowingness through our conversation. So he teaches music. So I'll ask him like, who's your favorite student this week? And he'll say, Katie. And I'll say, what song is Katie working on? Why? Well, you know, how is she with it? Like, I'll stay with it. It's not like, oh, Katie, great, move on to the next topic. It's great. Katie, what else can I ask about this? How can I get a feel for this? Like, I think that's another key to the asking the right questions is I want to know as much about these things as possible. And this is the other thing. It's like, I actually want to know. Like, this interviewer didn't want to know. Like, that was so clear from the interview. Like, she didn't really care about getting to know Amy. She didn't really care about facilitating a deeper knowingness between the audience and Katie, which I feel like is a moderator or a conversational facilitator's job, is to like help the audience and the interview subject develop a relationship. But this woman, it was all about her and how cute and quirky she was, and she just wanted the audience to know that she was freaking adorable and she was not attuned to the task at hand. But for me, like, if I want to know someone's process, that means going deeper in, asking other questions. It's why, you know, I'm very prone to asking someone if there's something that they're good at. Does that come naturally to you? Is that something that you cultivated? Like, how did you come by this gift? Right? Very simple question that I ask very often. But here's another example that happened last week. So I was, it actually relates to the newsletter. So we'll get into this deeper. And in the past, I have been known to take the process of creating a newsletter to a really cuckoo pants extreme where it can take me like anywhere from like 5 to 10 hours to do. And so I got it in my head that I needed an illustration of a coyote. And I had done way back in the day, like, you know, a bajillion eons ago, I had a comic book called Coyote Medicine that I used to sell at bookstores in LA. So I was looking for one of those coyote images in like my jillions of totally disorganized hard drives. So it led me to a folder of archival art, and I just geeked out a little bit, went down like a short nostalgic rabbit hole, and found this old comic strip that I created called Kundalini Percolating. And I'd forgotten, I mean, this happens so often. Like, I've done so many things, like, I forget about the entire bodies of work. So I thought some of them were cool, and I needed to go to FedEx to print some things out anyway. So I thought, all right, just throw these on a little thumb drive and print them out. So I printed them out, and I shared them with two different friends. And these two experiences were like night and day. So one of the friends, I showed him the comics, which he had never seen of mine before, and he just kind of shuffled through them like he didn't read anything. He made a point of like seeing each page, but he didn't take any time with them. And no harm, no foul, not everyone's going to be interested in like seeing my work, right? And what a phenomenal opportunity for me to see, oh, this is where I was hoping for a little bit more external validation. Great. Why don't I look at that kind of outward reaching crack in me and fill it up myself, right? It wasn't a problem. It's not like there was no conflict around it. I just observed, like, oh, okay, this person isn't really interested in what I'm sharing. No big deal. I took the exact same stack of comics to the aforementioned friend Ross, and he sat down and went through every single panel with me. He read the words, he noticed the images, like, oh, I like your trees. Oh, the coyote's tail looks fluffy there. Oh, interesting spotting. Like, he went through everything. And for me, as an artist, that was way more fun. Like, that feels so nice that someone cares enough to actually focus their sacred attention on all of these tiny little bits and pieces that I'd put so much time and effort into. Again, I'm not saying one way is wrong and one way is right. And I certainly wouldn't hire the first person to be unpacking art for an audience. He's clearly not wired for that. Ross would be great for that. Similarly, Friend of mine, I saw her over the weekend, and she works with wood. She's a carpenter, among other things. And she had made this beautiful wooden table that she was showing me. And I was looking at it, and I said, "Oh, I love the pegs." And she's like, "Oh, thank you. I made all those myself." And I was truly dazzled by the pegs. I love like an old school wood project that has only wood pieces putting it together. Like the Integratron. For those who've been to the Integratron in Landers outside of Joshua Tree, we know it's a wooden dome structure, perfect sound chamber that has no metal in it. Back in the day, when I was a little kid, I had a toy box in my bedroom that my dad made me, and it was put together with these wood pegs. So that's what I was noticing. And she said, "Oh, thank you for noticing the details. If you want to learn to make other people feel good, if it doesn't come naturally for you, I am naturally attuned to these kind of details. I can geek out on the smallest things for a long time. And this is one of those magic tricks that I'm sharing with you to make other people feel so good, is really focus your attention on what someone is showing you or what someone has made, and take a moment to dive into the details of their efforts. It goes such a long way with artists, creators, makers, you know, even someone who's made you a meal, like focusing on like, "Oh, is that oregano that I taste?" Or, you know, like, "Wow, did you, whatever, I'm thinking of the process. Did you boil the whatever before you sauteed it?" Right? Like, it's moving one, think of it like spatially. It's stepping into their experience as the maker and asking about that. I am telling you guys, it will light people up and have them feel seen and validated in a massive, massive way. So same goes with asking questions. It's that kind of hair day. I really strive to do podcasts without messing with the situation, and it is what it is today. So thanks for rolling with me. So it goes the same with asking questions. And I've seen this, like, I've seen it with avoidant. I just did it. I just caught it. I've seen it with people, including myself, who are in the process of moving from avoidant attachment strategies to secure attachment strategies. Although I feel like I'm pretty much operating in the secure realm at this point. And attuning to the specifics of these attachment strategies allowed me to look back on some old patterns and old behaviors and see them through that lens. So a lot of times, people who are dealing with, you know, mild to massive sociopathy, people who are dealing with avoidant attachment strategies, people who are dealing in power struggles will withhold in exchanges. Here's what that looks like. Say I'm having a facial and I'm talking to the person doing my facial. "Oh, you know, what'd you do this weekend?" "Oh, I went to the circus." Cool. If the person's response to that is "Cool, any plans for next week?" That is not only one missed opportunity, it's like 30 missed opportunities. That is a way to stay on the surface, that rock skipping, develop no intimacy whatsoever, generate no feelings of like warm and fuzziness. It's just a way to keep everything apart, right? If the person doing my facial wanted to go to cultivate more intimacy with me, wanted to really foster a juicy conversation, she could say, "Oh, cool, I haven't been to this circus in years. How was it? Like, what was the best part? You know, like, what was the vibe like? What was the crowd like? Are they still doing cotton candy?" It's like going deeper into the experience. Here is the experience at hand. How can I go deeper? What's a different realm of what's being presented that I can explore, unpack, ask about? Like, one of my favorite things to do whenever I meet someone who is or was a stripper is go, "Ooh, what was your vibe? What music did you dance to? What was your theme? What were your costumes? Like, what was your whole, you know, like kind of theme as a stripper?" And you will see strippers light up, right? Like, who doesn't love to talk about that? The key to asking good questions is go deeper into whatever is at hand in the moment and really exhaust it. Like, ask as many questions about it as possible. If you come into an interview with your laundry list of questions, like this person did with Amy Sedaris, there are like 1,000 missed opportunities there. And this like preconceived structure is going to completely perv the organic unfolding that any interviewer has no idea is there, right? When I go into a podcast interview, I might have a general idea of what we're going to talk about. And sure, there are people who come on my podcast who want to promote something very specific related to their work or their mission or a brand new project. And that's wonderful. There's no problem with that. We can do the same thing within that structure. And for me personally, I prefer exploratory conversations. I prefer showing up blank slate, asking a couple questions, and then seeing what emerges from that and where my authentic curiosity and interest wants to take that information. I think that's a more feminine, actually, that is absolutely a way more feminine, like capital F feminine. I'm not saying like girly in terms of like lace and mascara, but it's a way more feminine approach to interviews and conversations because I'm not dependent on a structure, right? I don't have a set, fixed something in mind. I'm more availing myself to the unknown and the mystery that is our authentic alchemy. And this is, you know, something to recall is that everyone's alchemy is different. Every dynamic is different. So my alchemy with, you know, my chiropractor, and I don't say that because he's in a service position, but it's like, his personality, his worldview is going to mix with my personality and my worldview in a very specific way that if I'm honest and authentic and paying attention is going to be very different from how I show up, you know, with my friend Deb in Seattle. We're going to have our own alchemy. And so when I show up with a set list of questions, I'm not honoring that authentic alchemy. I'm not availing myself to that authentic alchemy. I'm not surrendering to that, right? And then surfing and floating with what's showing up. I'm coming in masculine. Here's my prefix idea. I'm going to drive this conversation in this specific way, regardless of what shows up, which means missing a lot of that authenticity. So that conversation sucked so bad. And I was unpacking it with Ross afterwards because I went with a different friend and he mentioned a woman in town who had tickets to the same event. And when she found out who was doing the interviewing, she sold them. And I totally understand why, like, this woman sucked. So everyone has free will. If you want to have shallow, go nowhere conversations that create more distance, feel free. If you want to generate good feelings, more intimacy, juicier, more illuminating conversations, I recommend using the kind of geographic visual cue of how can I step deeper in to what this person is saying? How can I stay with this current conversational topic and go to another corner, go into a nook or a cranny that hasn't been unpacked to reveal more information. I think that does it on that part. I'm just thinking of, so going back to the avoidant attachment style, I don't think I totally tied that together yet. Is that withholding in conversation? So there's different types of withholding, right? There's withholding with like the people really close to us, like our partners or our family, and we're in, for whatever reason, we hold back on sharing how we feel about things or what came up or whatever. And everyone has different reasons for withholding, but the specific pattern I'm talking about is kind of like an unconscious power play or an unconscious means of staving off connection. There's someone in my life who this happens with quite a lot, and I've learned not to take it personally, where I'll share something about myself and then she has sometimes just like gone silent, and I can feel the physical shutdown, and there's not even a response, let alone like an unpacking or a stepping in deeper. She has every right to that strategy, and she totally comes by it honestly. And for me, I don't feel safe on the end of that. And I don't, what I've noticed is over the years, it's generated less and less goodwill, where like, I just feel less and less comfortable with her because of this particular pattern of this, like, it's like a power play of like this withholding, like, I'm not gonna respond to this. I'm not gonna offer any kindness or like standard issue social etiquette. And then like, I have the upper hand. And I'm not saying this is like conscious. This is just like one of the ancillary patterns that goes along with, as I said, avoidant attachment, sociopathy, I'm sure a bunch of other things, probably borderline personality disorder. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's just noticing when I've noticed this in myself, because I have in the past operated with a similar pattern where in certain situations, when I could feel someone subtly seeking a specific type of external validation, I have in the past withheld from giving that. And it is a sadistic power play, and that's okay. Like, we're all wired with shadows, and we all have them. And what I've learned is instead of giving in to that like subtle unconscious sadistic power play of not saying anything, when I move into a less comfortable place and actually step into the person's experience and stay there with them, it just feels so much better for the whole alchemical flow, right? It like moves us closer together. It keeps us in a conversation where we get to go deeper and learn about each other more versus like, okay, I'll stay out here in disconnect, up on my like imaginary egoic pedestal where it's safer, right? And again, like what we transmute these things when we're ready to transmute them. And when we're paying money to see, you know, someone as brilliant and witty as Amy Sedaris, who probably has so many phenomenal stories to share and such an interesting process around her work, when we're paying to see her in conversation with someone else, that kind of exchange, which I think was less about like an avoidant power play and more about some sort of like shallow optical showboating in front of an audience and a sort of narcissism, for sure a narcissism, it doesn't really make for a good show for the people who've paid to be there. So what I recommend is play with this in your day-to-day conversations. You know, it can be something as simple as, you know, commenting to the cashier at the grocery store, like, "Ooh, I really like those earrings. Oh, thank you. Are those gold? Are those silver?" Right? Like you step closer to them and it creates more closeness between you guys as well as good feelings. You know, whenever I notice someone wearing some sort of sacred geometry something or with a sort of sacred geometry tattoo, I always say like, "What's your experience? Like, can you feel the energetic effects?" I'd love to know your feedback if this is helpful. And I am thinking like maybe it would be wise to do like maybe a course or a webinar or something on how to ask better questions and we can workshop it better. Cause we also don't want it to be like fake, right? Like we don't want someone, I'm not encouraging you guys to like pull some stupid question out of your butthole to try to like force a contrived connection that isn't there. I think it's just about generating like genuine interest in someone else's experience and stepping deeper into that. Okay, I feel good on that piece. Let's celebrate with a sip. Okay, I wanna get into the ChatGPT stuff. And before we dive into that, there's one other languaging pattern that I've heard so many times this week that I feel I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge it. And that languagey pattern is this. Well, I wouldn't worry about the SEO right now. What I would worry about is blank. So as I write about in my books, the word worry, if we go to the etymology, it means to choke. And when we move into how it's being used in the modern parlance, it basically means to create mental distress over some external situation, right? It doesn't matter which version of worry we're using. There is zero instance wherein that is a healthy emotion or energetic for us to be cultivating. And this is a throwaway term that I've heard people who I thought knew better toss out. So I'm just gonna invite us to be mindful. Like, remember Pee-wee's Playhouse, where there was a word of the day and we'd hear the word of the day, say the word was like blossom, and then you hear it out in the world and you go, ah! Let's do the same with worry. Let us create a club around the unworry club and just red flag for listening to how that word is being bandied about and making sure that we are not using it in our own vocabularies, lexicon, and being mindful that we're not directing others. This is where I'm noticing is the unconscious directing of others to worry, right? So it's wrong use of will, it's fear, and it's just sullying the landscape. So instead of worrying about anything, you can focus on, you know, what you probably want to prioritize next, right? There's subtle wrong use of will in these words, and in specific contexts, like when I'm talking to the guys who I hire to take care of my website, instead of saying, well, you don't wanna worry about SEO now, you wanna worry about blah, 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 right? That could do subtle energetic frequency harm were I to internalize that. Smarter to say, you know, no need to worry about the SEO. I think it's better for you to focus on blah, 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 right? Just very subtle. And thank you for joining me in the unworrying club and noticing where this word is being misused, which is pretty much all the time because I've yet to find a functional use for that word. Okay, ChatGPT, it's time. It's time to get into the ChatGPT conversation. Let's sip it out beforehand. This is a big one. So, I want to set the stage by helping you, the audience, understand where I'm coming from in the larger computer AI conversation. I was kicked out of my junior high in eighth grade. Why, you ask? Great question. I was kicked out of junior high when I refused to take computer class. They had given us a choice. It was supposedly an elective where we could choose between communications and computers. And I chose communications and I was put in computers. And I wrote a very bold, I didn't think it was inappropriate, but I wrote a very clear letter saying, no, I refuse. I made my choice, which is to take communications, and computers will be the downfall of this species and I want no part of it. I refuse. And then I was kicked out. Similarly, when I was in grad school I went to journalism school, and last semester, we all were tasked with doing some sort of big presentation. I don't remember what the prompt was. And someone gave his presentation on the internet and the World Wide Web. And I interrupted his presentation to say, this will be the downfall of humanity. We must say no, we must push back against this. And so it is very obviously ironic how much internet I myself use and how much of my business requires me to be on the internet. So, the past 2-3 weeks, by way of some really, really helpful coaching, by way of one Nathaniel Solis, who I'm not an affiliate, and I cannot recommend his offerings highly enough. But he helped me see wherein I've been getting resentful of how much internet and computer work I've been doing. And how necessary it was and is for me to switch it up. So, without going into any of the really not interesting details, I've definitely been nearing the edge of burnout, working 7 days a week, morning till night, on all of the tasks around entrepreneuring, just realizing like it's not working for me, this much energetic output for so little, historically, so little returns. And so he mentioned to me stepping into the ChatGPT world. He actually just recently led a ChatGPT, like how to use it workshop. And so I've had so many mixed feelings around it, which I think a lot of us do, whereas like it's gross. I want nothing to do with it. Like it's disgusting. I don't want to be engaging with a large languaging model. I don't want to be giving it my information. And two things happened that changed my perspective on this. So one, I mean, point blank, Nathaniel's like, all your competitors are using it and they're moving forward much more quickly than you are. About a month before that, I had run into a woman in town so you know how sometimes there are these people, this has come up, I don't want to say there are these people in terms of like reducing people or stereotyping, and past 5 years, very confusing as far as like these fractures in our friend groups and colleagues and whatnot. And what I noticed is that there were a bunch of people who chose not to get certain medical interventions, whom I had simply assumed we were on the same page. And I realized a lot of people who are more leftist liberal leaning still chose not to get those interventions, which is beautiful. It's wonderful. And yet we have very different worldviews. So this was one of those people. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly, highly recommend because that's when I go into the whole ChatGPT situation, which is clearly timely and relevant for all of us, you can find the second half of today's podcast, as well as all of my podcasts, on both my Locals and Patreon communities. At both communities, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations. Plus, you get special discounts and advanced knowingness of live events, webinars, and courses, including my upcoming Language of Healing webinar, which I am holding Thursday, June 26th at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. Now, that will be recorded for those who can't make it live, and for those who can make it live, I'm so excited to share this 2-hour webinar with you. Not only will we be learning the precepts of the language of healing, we will be learning how to program our sacred vessels for optimal accelerated healing, as well as thriving and perfect, wonderful health with our every words. You also get the opportunity to workshop any healing initiations you are currently navigating with me in real time live. So please run, don't walk to the registration link in the show description and save your spot for this one of a kind webinar that I'm super excited to be sharing with you guys. And quick note about the ChatGPT thing, which I recognize at this stage of the show, we haven't even gotten into yet. And I feel like throwing in a little bit of extra content. So it's going to be here. Time isn't linear. Life isn't linear. Podcasting isn't linear. At least my podcast is not linear. This is the first live webinar that I have hosted in well over a year. Well over a year. Why? Because it has been so labor intensive in the past of like creating all the marketing materials and the promo stuff and the payment links and things that I just haven't yet found my way to comfort with. They've been completely prohibitive and have kept me from offering these live webinars and courses, which is what I really love doing. And this is another way that I personally am benefiting from tippy-toeing into using ChatGPT as a tool, despite so many misgivings and so much ambivalence, is that it is helping me to actually put this webinar out without the overwhelming like horrors of doing all the marketing stuff. And so with the help of ChatGPT on the marketing front, I am very, very happy to be returning to the realm of offering live webinars like The Language of Healing, which is taking place on June 26th. Last call to sign up for my newsletter, at least at this portion of the podcast, at DannyKatz.com, which is another great way to stay abreast of offerings like The Language of Healing and to stay abreast of my product drops, which I'm actually only announcing by way of my blog at DannyKatz.com and my newsletter. So there are so many benefits to just navigating over to DannyKatz.com, giving it your email address. I promise you, I don't share it with any other like data sharing companies. I will not overwhelm your inbox with a bunch of nonsense. It's high value only. All right, that really does it for housekeeping. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon and at the Language of Healing webinar on June 26th. Have a rockin' day.